This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The championship belt is right here.
Joe Cowley.
Well, you know what? Joe Cowley writes something, he's not going to write that just because. Just because, you know, you don't take that. When you are that type of media, I don't think you do it.
Columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times.
According to Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Covering Chicago sports for over 20 years.
A little birdie told me.
Don't little bird me. I'm the dean of Get It Done University. Don't little bird me.
All the latest news and notes on your Chicago Bulls.
That's Billy Donovan, head coach of the Bulls. He has got to go deal with Joe Cowley and all the questions that Joe is going to ask him.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be with you guys.
Joe Cowley.
The standard is the standard.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Bum stickity bum stickity bum. Yes, our guy Joe Cowley does an incredible job of covering the Bulls. He also is a good ombudsman when we start talking any sort of football. By the way, he also covered baseball for, 87 years.
Yeah, so Cowley's good at talking about all kinds of stuff. You're right. I assume right now he is outside of Aaron Rodgers' house with a boombox over his head trying to beg him to become a Steeler.
I was wondering about this, Joe. First of all, hi. Thank you for doing this. We appreciate you. And then, two, what do you think about the idea of Aaron Rodgers being a Steeler?
Mm-hmm. Flummox.
See? That was stellar.
What's happening?
Look, Aaron and I have a lot in common, so I think it'd be great.
What exactly do you guys... Did you date Shailene Woodley?
No, I'm on a darkness retreat right now with the Bulls. I've been in the darkness since Houston. I'm the only idiot that's gone on all these games, so I need some ayahuasca and... It's welcome to Sacramento, boys. 4:15 flight. It was great.
Wait, what do you mean you're the only one? Are you the only beat guy? Is if you feel like you're the only beat?
I was the only one that started off in Houston. I'm the only idiot that said, "Yeah, 6 games. That sounds fun."
So not even the beat guys are covering all the games.
I mean, you did get to witness
they've all kind of jumped in, but I was the idiot that decided that. Hard time with Andy Dufresne was a good idea.
Hey, man, chronicling the turnaround that Ime Udoka has had in Houston.
Seriously, that's a fun team.
That's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. They play, obviously, an up-tempo style, young, hard-nosed, physical. And I'll say this. I mean, you know, as much as people want to rip on the Bulls, and trust me, it's all warranted, the last 3 weeks, ever since really the trade, it took a little growing pains for about a week or two, but I just love the way they actually are competing now and playing with some physicality. They're not very talented. They don't have, you know, that dude, so that's always going to be a problem. But at least now it's not some slappy team that's going out there and is not only bad but soft. They're at least playing with a little more edge. I think they gave away a little edge yesterday. It was probably the first time in a while they let a team out physical them. But for the most part, it's been a better brand of basketball to at least stomach.
Well, see, that was the reasoning for the call. It's exactly that. Like, what are we seeing? Are these just, you know, is it a succession of wins against other teams that are just kind of slogging their way through an odd portion of the schedule? Are the Bulls getting production that bad teams get from decent players just sort of by happenstance? Or is there actually something happening here in terms of something that Billy has built out of this very odd season?
Yeah, no, it's kind of a perfect storm. I mean, the bottom half to the middle of the East, they've all let go of the rope. So if you're getting a team like that, you could see in the fourth quarter that they really aren't trying to win the game. You're also seeing three guys that were acquired that all have a chip on their shoulder, whether it's to stay here or it's whether to prove the teams that moved them, Kevin Huerter and Zach Collins and Trey Jones, that those teams made a mistake. And so and also you're starting to see this time of the year, the idea of going, you know, 9-10 deep and playing with the third best pace in the league. You're seeing a lot of teams in the third and fourth quarter when you get to the free throw line, they got their hands grabbing the shorts on their knees. And the Bulls are all just kind of cycling guys in and ready to go because they're just used to it. They're in better condition. So it's kind of a perfect storm of things. And I give credit. I know Billy Donovan gets killed in that city. I give him a lot of credit for flipping the switch on this philosophy, offensive philosophy he wanted to do, because he knew he was void of pure talent with DeMar and Alex gone. And then on top of that, beating this idea of physicality into their heads and getting them to be a more well-rounded team that's going to run with you and they're also going to bruise you. So I think he gets a lot of credit for coaching to his philosophy and coaching to his team and giving this team an identity for the first time in a while. The identity used to be DeMar, help us. Now the identity is, hey, when we see you grabbing those shorts in the fourth quarter at the free throw line, we got your asses.
Joe, how do you feel Billy's done with the development of Modest Bouzelas?
Great, because Modest loves it. And that's the only one that matters at the end of the day. If he felt like he was somehow wronged or not getting the minutes or had a leash on him and the leash was being pulled too tight and the love was too tough, that'd be one thing. But that's not what you're getting from him. You're getting from a kid that's a yes sir, no sir type guy that appreciates everything that Billy's done, listens to Billy, tries to retain it, but obviously sometimes the speed shakes that out of his head. And I talked to him yesterday after he had a rough one, and Kevin Durant does that to a lot of guys. And he told me, he's like, you know, you could watch all the film you want. They could prep you all they want. When you go out there against KD, you got to go out there and you got to feel it. You got to understand it, because film is not going to do it justice. He's like, I can't believe how strong he is for how skinny he is. He just, and I'm like, that's because he's a grown-ass man and you're not. And Modest just laughs. So he gets it, and I think he appreciates the way he was kind of raised this first year with the Bulls.
Well, I was expecting a little more production once playing time opened up for him. Why is that not happening, and does that affect your thought process on him? Doesn't sound like it does to you.
No, because I understand his focus is trying to become a better defender. And I think he's learning how to exert that energy on the defensive end but still have it in the tank for the offensive end. And he's never played this many games. He's never played this many minutes. So it's kind of hit him at once. I asked him about the rookie wall yesterday, and he's like, there ain't no rookie wall. He goes, this is just the NBA. It's a long season, and I'm just figuring it out. But I feel great. My confidence hasn't wavered. So I think it's just – He admittedly wants to be great, and he wants to be great on both ends of the ball. He wants to lead the team in shot blocking. He wants to lead, be a top 10 shot blocker, rim protector, and he wants to be a highlight on offense. And when those are your goals and you're shooting for that moon, if you fall short and you hit the stars, that's pretty damn good.
Overall, when it comes to your personal draft philosophy versus what the Bulls' draft philosophy is, do you ever think that it's appropriate that you start looking for specific types of players instead of the most talented players? Because in trying to rebuild the Bulls, right, they might not get the best player might end up being a tantalizing guy like Patrick Williams, but that doesn't necessarily – he might not have the type of makeup that you want to draft in the position that you're in.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is that's a function of the draft. The draft dictates that. If you end up in the top three of this draft, you're taking one of three guys, and be damn the rest of your roster. And VJ Edgecombe is right there as far as I'm concerned, because when he's going, when he's flying, I mean, he's got, and he's, I'm not comparing him, but he's got some Anthony Edwards to him as far as violent finishing at the rim, athleticism. I mean, there's so many other parts of his game he doesn't have of Ant's, but as far as the flash, he's got that. So, you know, it's definitely a 1-2 and a 3, and it doesn't matter what your roster is. You know, if you have to move guys or they have to figure out. So, and then next year, it could be a 1-2-3-4-5 with that draft. So after that, yes, then you have to look and say, okay, our front court could possibly get very thin by 26. So maybe we look at a Derek Queen. I mean, that's probably the area code that the Bulls are now going to be drafting because their executive doesn't understand the importance of landing good dudes. He'd rather build a team out 1 through 12 like that works. And then at that point, once you get out of that talent pool, that first tier, then you're kind of looking at, yeah, does this dude fit what we want to do? Is he going to run? Is he going to play with high pace? Is he going to be a rim protector and play with physicality that we need? So that's when you start checking those boxes.
I brought up Derek Queen yesterday. He was one of the players that I mentioned that people should be watching during the tournament. I love his old man game. Like, it's straight up old man game. It is 14-foot baseline jumper. It is catch the ball in the high post, back you down, spin move. It's he's got all the tricks in his bag as an old school. If you would have dropped him into this league 30 years ago, he for sure would be a star. I really like him, and I know that he doesn't fit what the modern NBA is, but damn it if I don't love his game, Joe.
Yeah, and I think some of that is changing because you have so many good shooters on the floor now. You can go four out and keep one guy in. I mean, you can get away with that now. The idea that everybody's got to be a stretch big and everybody's got to be able to shoot the three, it's nice if you have that. But, you know, it's unfortunate that Okafor just kind of got caught in a window that because his talent was ridiculous. High school and even college, I was like, okay, this guy's going to change things. And then all of a sudden the league just said, no, we don't play that way anymore. Well, now you start seeing – it is that there are teams that are actually going back to that, having a physical big because they have four other guys that they feel confident are 40% shooters from three. So you can get away with it a little bit more now. So it's going to be interesting how he looks and what his shot looks like. I mean, you can always look at a guy's shot, especially, you know, there's a lot of coaches that believe how you shoot free throws will correlate to what kind of three-point shooter you can be. If it looks good from the free throw line, they feel like they can – have the player development guys to get it out further. So, I wouldn't rule him out as a guy that can come in and play a role. He's not a game changer, and that's the problem. The Bulls need game changers, and they don't understand how to do that.
Boy, I just realized how much that sounds like. If you can shoot from the free throw line, we can get it out further. Sounds like this guy has doubles power, but we believe there's 20 or 30 home runs in there somewhere. And it just, sometimes it happens, and sometimes it doesn't. The other guy that Lawrence brought up yesterday, and we were talking about these two, was Liam McNeely, this kid from UConn. Now, that's just
from UConn.
He's a great shooter. Like, he's a great shooter, and he runs relentlessly around screens, and he can shoot from deep, and he's just like, that's the skill set that has to be a starting point for me. And part of that is like, Patrick Williams could turn into a great shooter. Like, Dalen Terry can do a lot of things, but we'll see. Like, Julian Phillips is a great athlete, and he can add shooting. It's like, nah, man, in this league these days, get me a drop-dead shooter who can add more.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to avoid your question, Liam McNeely. I love his pedigree and stuff. The name you brought up that I'm just done with, Patrick Williams.
Yeah, man, tell
us. I'm just kind of done with him. There was a point yesterday, the modest dunk, where he dunks, he gets fouled, thrown to a cameraman, he's laying down. The whole bench is standing up, clapping, going crazy, all except 44, just sitting there. Coaches are up clapping, his teammates are up clapping, kind of walking on the floor to make sure, and you got one guy who's just sitting there. I'm just kind of done. I'm done with him.
Wow.
He needs to hit rock bottom now, and unfortunately they gave him a contract where I think he has lost his love for basketball, and he's would probably dispute that. But I just see a guy that happens to be built like that, happens to have a skill set, and happens to got paid and just doesn't give a damn anymore. And so, I kind of saw that the last year with Adam Dunn, where it was just a guy that would rather be in a deer stand, but he just happened to be able to hit 500-foot home runs. So, hell, why don't he do that a couple times a week? And that's kind of how Patrick Williams is kind of rubbing me right now, where you've gone through different coaches now. They've had to find different coaches because mentally you don't like this coach and you don't – you're not that good, dude. You should be, they should give you a ball boy until you figure it out. So I'm just kind of over him. I'm kind of done with the excuses. And it was a bad draft pick made even worse because Arturas couldn't admit he was wrong and opened up the checkbook and gave it to him. And now he's giving it to the Bulls.
Wow. I mean, where does it rank among Arturas' mistakes to not realize this and cut bait via trade or simply not sign as opposed to empowering and doing what he just did? That's got to be very high on the list of mistakes then.
It's the biggest mistake he's made because he compounded it. He wouldn't admit that the guy doesn't have it. He wouldn't admit that he took a sixth man from Florida State who couldn't even start because of the body and the build and just didn't look at the man. And now we're stuck with a NBA player that's built like a guy that should be 2010, but he still wants to play like a child. And it's just. And then he paid him on top of it. He paid him. He didn't even let the market set the price. He paid him because Arturas had to show he's smarter than everybody else.
Joe, how do the Bulls view the play-in tournament?
Like it's the Larry O'Brien trophy about to be held up, and that's the problem because most of the NBA doesn't really care about it and thinks it's a joke. But the Bulls have been kind of just – which, to their credit, if you could get a coach to get a bunch of guys to jump in a foxhole – for some crap a trophy, and then you get to go to Cleveland and get run out of the building. Yay. But, you know, I think the rest of the league, you're seeing how the rest of the league is dealing with it. It's like embarrassing. You think Sacramento's not embarrassed that they're in the play-in? You think Golden State and Dunleavy was embarrassed before they made that trade for Jimmy that they were stuck in the play-in? I mean, that was embarrassing to them. For the Bulls, it's a freaking gold medal. So, and maybe that's the edge they have this last month in these last 13 games, is it means something to them, and they believe in chasing it down and getting as best in the seedings you can get. And, you know, if they can host a game, that's what, $1.5 million in Jerry's pocket for one game. So, you know, God bless them.
So, you know, ownership is cool with it. Seems like AK's cool with it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, AK's cool with it.
Yeah, ownership's cool with it.
And AK's.
You know what else ownership's cool with?
What else?
The Boston Celtics selling for $6.1 billion. Because that means right now the Bulls are $5.6 billion easily, don't you think?
Yeah, the Celtics sold for the most of any professional sports franchise ever this morning.
Yep.
And
you don't think that put a smile on Michael and Jerry's face? And now all of a sudden they're not a $4.8 or a $5 billion, that they might actually be a $5.5-$5.6 billion team right now.
So is Michael going to get out when Jerry passes and gets out of the Sox? Is Michael going to get out too?
No, from everything I've been told, the Sox are movable because of lack of salary cap and the belief that eventually you just aren't going to make the money that you want to make. But the Bulls are a gift that keeps on giving. So I would say that the Bulls are staying put for a very, very long time, and the Sox will be disposable as soon as Jerry either decides or Jerry goes to a different place.
How does a seemingly honorable basketball lifer with the soul of a coach survive amidst all the crap that you're describing?
You talking about Billy?
Yes.
Well, they love him. Ownership loves him, and front office loves him.
But how does he survive? How does he choose to survive?
How does he deal with it? Yeah, you know what? Because Billy, he just loves ball. I mean, he's wired like. Yeah, I mean, he brought up Pitino, and obviously the two different men who have two different paths and beliefs in life. But the one belief that they share and is their kinship is they love ball. And Pitino had to get fired from Louisville, went to Greece to coach. This is one of the most successful college coaches of all time. Went to Greece, went to Iona just to get back on the stage he's at now. And Billy's wired the same way. He just loves it. Billy's one of those dudes that just he's going to have to die on the court. He just loves it. He's not like, yeah, this has a shelf life, and I see, you know, Fred Hoiberg to me always coached because there was something bigger afterwards and he liked the lifestyle. Billy just loves X's and O's. I've never been around a dude that just, you know, he was on my podcast and we didn't even talk about the Bulls. We talked about the running Rebs, and we talked about some of the kids he was recruiting in Cleveland that I covered, James Posey and Melvin Levitt and Damon String, and he knows all those names. And it was just like two guys. And at the end, he even said to me, he goes, no one under 50 years old is going to listen to this podcast and get anything out of it. I was like, I don't care. I loved it. So, I mean, that's just Billy. He just loves ball. He will talk ball any day that ends in Y.
Sir, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, you guys. Hey, hop a flight out here. Join the darkness retreat.
No, you already left my favorite spot. Once you left Phoenix, Sacramento, you can keep that. I'm good.
Go find Aaron. Go get him and put a helmet on him.
He's coming. He's coming.
Oh, my God. It's perfect. You deserve each other.
That is Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. He does a fabulous job of covering the Bulls, and he likes to throw a baseball thought in there for you, too.
Adam Dunn catching strays. That was awesome.
Adam Dunn got an Oscar, though, when he got out.
Man.
Shout out to him. Categories is next. Speaks is very excited about it.
I really am.
Next on The Score.